Monday Night Travel. Thought tonight we might talk about the growth of adventure and expedition cruises. Rod Imey is a committed adventurer and expedition cruiser. He's been on the show before. I think we've talked about Papua New Guinea and even some of the polar regions. Rod has just published a guide to adventure cruising on the newsstands now. I thought we might talk a little bit about it. Evening. Good to see you.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for inviting me back.
How different is it from regular cruising?
Well, I think everybody's been on a cruise of some sort, even if it's just a paddle steamer or a river cruise. So everyone's got a bit of a concept of what it's like to get aboard a ship for pleasure. And I know you've been on plenty of cruises, Tony, and you've got your favourites.
I love them as a concept, just the fact that you get on once, you unload the yep. luggage, and that's all you have to do for the next couple of weeks.
Always a big plus, not in and out of hotels and taxi cabs and things like that. And, of course, you'd bypass a lot of the airport check-ins too when you've got all your luggage if you're going in and out of Sydney. Yeah. But to differentiate adventure and expedition cruising, and I'm sure there's many of your listeners out there who've been on similar vessels, they are typically smaller. Some of them are ring-ins from ex-Soviet oceanographic and even the spy fleet, built tough in the Scandinavian countries and Russia for the rigours of Arctic work, making themselves ideal for some of the Antarctic and Arctic itineraries that many of the companies are currently espousing. So that's particularly some of those vessels. Now, for people that have travelled on, say, the P&O, Pacific Dawn out of Sydney or any of those similar ships, it is quite a leap. It's a conceptual leap and it's a philosophical leap for many, and it's quite a different experience.
What are the facilities on board like? I mean, are they regular cabins and is it a regular food regime and that sort of thing?
The short answer is yes. However, if you, as I say, have acclimatised yourself to the big ship experience, you need to make some adjustments. You need to throw away a few preconceptions. You don't have the all-you-can-eat buffet. There's no Las Vegas entertainment. Forget about the casino. Leave your tuxedo at home. Bring your gumboots. Bring your wet weather gear and your warm underpants. Mm. Right? That's the sort of thing you bring.
What is the attraction? Obviously, you're going to places that not many people have been.
And that is the attraction because, I mean, so many of the big ships nowadays, they're just getting bigger and bigger, and that's fine for people who like it. 2,000 and 3,000 people on a ship trying to get ashore. You know, sometimes you're queuing up in groups hours and hours at a time, but these ships typically, the Expedition Adventure Cruise Fleet, are taking typically 50 to 150 passengers, somewhere in that. Some of the bigger ones are up towards 500 is probably about the limit, really, and there's a few of those.
It's one of those areas of the world, for example, Antarctica, where you don't want a lot of people, and in fact, they don't allow a lot of people.
Well, it's a self-regulation. The International Association of Antarctic Tour Operators, IATO, do have a code, and they require operators who are taking ships down there to land typically no more than about 100 passengers at any one time. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong on that one. Obviously, the bigger cruise liners that go down there and have a look at the fjords and the icebergs and the glaciers, they just do it on a cruise pass basis, much like the Alaskan Inside Passage cruises. So you get to wonder and ogle at the scenery from the deck of your deck chair. But going ashore is really where it's at, you know.
Do you have to be physically fit to do these sort of things, or can you get by with just reasonable mobility?
Well, my answer to that is yes, but having travelled on quite a few of these expeditions now, I see people that are well into their 80s get off and on pitching Zodiacs in rough weather. I can remember one particular occasion when it was one of my very first landings and my very first cruise. We were going ashore in the Falkland Islands, and the captain blew the horn on the vessel and says, "Come aboard, we're dragging anchor. This 6,000-ton ship is dragging anchor." So we all piled back in the Zodiacs, and to a person, the Russian crew plucked people like hatchlings out of a nest, plucked them and threw them on the gangway, and that included people with walking frames and everything, and we barely got wet, let alone and it was quite an impressive sight to see. So having said that, people of all ages really can do it, as long as you're prepared mentally for what you're about to get.
Understood. And you take a warm set of clothes. No question. Luxury expedition yachts are doing this now, and that's going to be a new trend that's going a little bit upmarket.
It is a little bit more upmarket, and we've seen a few of them in our own waters. I mean, most celebrated one being, of course, the Orion. Mm. But even on a half a peg down, we've seen some of the smaller vessels, things operated by the North Star people out of Broome and Coral Princess people out of Cairns. Smaller ships, a little less luxuriously fitted, but nevertheless very capable. The Orion, as an expedition yacht, is fully seagoing, so it gets its way down to the deepest parts of Antarctica. It's a fairly ambitious itinerary, usually reserved for icebreakers and fully fledged ice-capable vessels. But those ships, there's the Celebrity Expedition doing the Galapagos Islands, and I think you've seen yourself some of the Sea Dream and Seabourn type of vessels offer an expedition component as well.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, is there a chance you could get stranded here? I mean, are you putting yourself in peril? I mean, we did see an incident, I think it was last year, where a vessel on its way to Antarctica went down.
Look, there's no getting away from that. It was one of the older vessels, and I must admit, though I know the superficial circumstances of what happened, only those in charge of the vessel would know exactly what happened, but there's no getting away from it. Mm. It hit a big chunk of ice, got a hole, and went down. Having said that, everybody got off safely. The safety procedures, evacuation procedures all worked perfectly well. In that part of the Antarctica, there is quite a busy sea trade, so the chances of another vessel coming along quickly has happened, was able. But, yeah.
Modern-day communications to probably limit the amount of problems that you're going to have.
I don't think we'll ever see another Titanic.
Yeah. A lot of them are refitted oceanographic vessels, and these are obviously, you know, pretty tough.
They are. They're utilitarian. They're robust. They're rigorous. They are... Many of them drawn from the ex-Soviet fleet, which most of which were busy in the 80s and a little bit in the 90s. Some
they
of which
obviously have very good radar.
They have all sorts of tricks. I'm not sure whether they've mothballed all the wizardry, but some of them were used to in the spy fleet, and that's a bit of fun to think that you're on an old Russian spy fleet. But Tony, they are completely refitted. Cabins are much more comfortable than I'm sure the espionage team were used to back in those days.
And the pictures of Nikita Khrushchev have been taken off.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Also coastal yachts. You've mentioned a few operating in Australia, but a lot of them operating, I guess, around the South American coastline.
There are, Tony. I think this is probably one of the growth areas. These are the sort of vessels which are finding their way, as we've already said, around Australia, places like the Great Barrier Reef, the beautiful Kimberleys, and some of the other areas are being explored as well. Papua New Guinea lends itself very well to those sort of vessels which don't require full ocean going capability, where they can pop between islands and dash in and out of archipelago through the Louisiades and out into the Bismarck Sea and the Solomon Sea and so forth, Bougainville, places like that. These ships are typically up to 2,000 tonne, maybe 100 passengers, 75 to 100 passengers. Some of them go down as few as 35, 36 passengers.
I've got to say, one itinerary that I would love is the Amazon. And they tell me that that's possible now.
Oh, absolutely. If you are taking one of the commonly available itineraries up the Amazon, you can get on a ship which would, you know, we're talking 1,000, 2,000 passenger ship. Mm. Big ships go up the Amazon. It's surprising. However, if you want to explore some of the real remote reaches of the Amazon, up into some in the Amazon basin, out into the Pantanal areas, up into the Rio Negro, where it gets quite narrow and relatively shallow, and you can get to some of the remote Indian native villages. Mm. Yes, you'll be going a much smaller the vessels. Some of them are a bit rudimentary, I should point out.
Charles Darwin's obviously big breakthroughs happen in the Galapagos Islands, and you can go and visit them. You'd need a small vessel for that.
Well, they've been on the menu for a while, the Galapagos Islands, and I've done one trip there myself on a ship that was about 30 passengers by a company called Eco Ventura. But it's quite busy over there. I would suggest to anyone who's contemplating the Galapagos, first of all, one, do it. It's fantastic. Secondly, do your homework, because Ecuador flagged ships aren't what we would call...
super safe.
Not super safe. And there are some horror stories coming out of the Galapagos. However, the international vessels that operate there, I mentioned before the Celebrity Expedition, mm-hmm. is one, and there are some of the companies operating from Australia. Peregrine have recently opened up another itinerary there.
And I mean, the good news about South America is there's going to be a lot more flights. I think Qantas is upgrading its services, and LAN also. And
I'm sure you've flown LAN. They're a fabulous airline. Hmm. They're great. And Qantas, well, everyone knows about Qantas, and now they're going direct to Buenos Aires, aren't they?
That's right. So that's going to open up South America a little bit more.
Absolutely. And if you're going to do one of the Antarctic itineraries out of Ushuaia, down at the bottom in Patagonia, Tierra del Fuego, then Buenos Aires is your hub to
good,
go down there.
Good stepping off point. What sort of activities can you get up to these days?
Well, probably the most, the thing that people will get up, particularly go on these ships for, is the wildlife experiences, particularly the Antarctic ones, where you're looking at two, sometimes three shore excursions on a single day, which is quite a lot for a cruise ship, which is why obviously lower numbers and smaller ships come into advantage. Now, you've got penguin colonies, all varieties of penguins down there. Some of the sub-Antarctic islands and the deeper Antarctic islands have all got their own varieties. You've got the seals, you've got the sea lions, you've got some of the beautiful pelagic birds. You've seen the albatross, and some of the big petrels are just fantastic.
But tell me, the penguins are a bit stinky.
They are stinky, Tony, yeah. And when you go ashore and you've got your gumboots on and you're sloshing around in the pink poop that they leave everywhere, because that's the colour of krill, the environmental procedures are that you stand in a particular in a bath and you get hosed off, basically. Yeah. But that's part of the attraction, Tony.
Indeed, indeed. I suppose with particularly Antarctica and Arctic, limited times of the year.
Of course. You won't be going down there in wintertime, that's for sure. So particularly the window of opportunity in Antarctica is November at an extreme, and some of them do stretch into March. And that's about it. The most popular time, of course, December, January. Best time, beautiful weather. We had a barbecue on the ship's deck in short sleeves, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, wasn't that fantastic?
It's wonderful, wonderful
short
experience.
Short sleeves, you were brave. What sort of activities can you get up to? It's mainly just adventure, experiencing the animals. Da, da, da.
Well, if you like photography, and I do, and I know a lot of people that I travel with do, so everyone's got a camera and they're enjoying their photography. Many of the vessels will also carry a very learned lecturers and naturalists, ornithologists and so forth to conduct lectures while you have time at sea, because of course, you know, you don't have the stage shows and the all the other diversions that you get on the larger ships. So traditionally it's a bit of a learning experience. We've got lecture theatres and so forth. Now, the other activities that you can get up to, you've got hiking, you can do that. Some of the companies are even offering ice diving in Antarctica for the experienced divers.
You
won't be doing it with your L plates on. So fully ticketed experienced divers, you can do ice diving. And some of the companies are also offering overnighting on the Antarctic Peninsula. So you pitch a tent and you'll stay overnight.
Well, you won't get Tony Bennett lookalikes, but you'll get quite an adventure. Adventure and Expedition Cruise Guide is in the current edition of Cruise Passenger magazine, and the guy who put it together, Rod Imey, with us tonight. So thanks, Rod.
Thanks for having me, Tony.